KNOM Update News. I'm Lorelei Kinnean, and it's 9:02. The Port Commission passed a motion last night to increase harbor rates by 5% across the board. In addition, the group voted to charge idle vessels according to their lengths. These changes will pass to the Nome Common Council for review. Early in the meeting, Phil Prismont, a fisherman storing two boats at the port, said Nome's harbor rates are already exceptional.
My daily rate in Nome for that fishing boat is more than any other harbor in this state. And I've docked in Sitka, Yakutat, Seward, Homer, Kodiak, False Pass, Accutane, and Port Muller.
If the proposal passes, this will be the second year in a row the port raises tariffs. Last year, the port upped the rates by 10%. Joy Baker, port project manager, said another increase is necessary. Marine traffic has multiplied over the past decade, placing higher demands on infrastructure and operations. The harbor required one employee in 2008. Now it requires four. And more traffic entails more repairs and upgrades on facilities. Baker said most of this construction is covered by grants, but those funding sources are uncertain and often require a financial match.
We go after these grants. Sometimes we get them, sometimes we don't. But if we do, we have to guarantee to meet whatever match there was.
For example, the port currently has a 50-50 grant match with the Department of Transportation to upgrade fenders and ladders and install lights at the harbor. And Baker said the port needs to generate its own funds, not only to match grants, but also to prove its fiscal responsibility to funding entities. In addition, the port has outstanding charges, like paying off its causeway construction. The increase in construction projects over the past decade drained the port's financial surplus. Baker said last year's purchase of an 18-acre laydown area actually wiped out that surplus, sending the port to pull from its fund balance. All this expansion was driven by escalating marine traffic, a trend Baker predicts to continue.
We're not trying to expand the facility on the backs of the users. Somewhere in the range of 60% to 80% of the funds to build and expand the facility are funded by outside sources. But we are still having to foot a portion of the bill, and that is the cost of the growth that we're seeing. It's a good thing for the facility. It's a good thing for the town to see this growth, and I expect it to continue.
The Nome Common Council should review the Port Commission's proposed changes at their regular meeting on Monday. And since the start of the week, the Alaska Business Development Center has been coordinating free tax assistance across the state. Teams of two and three volunteers traveled to bush communities to help residents prepare tax returns. On Wednesday, two volunteers were set up at folding tables in the Savunga IRA building. Bruce Merrill has lived in Alaska most of his life, and since retiring from a career spent at the Anchorage Public Library, he's gone on several tax assistance trips across the state with ABDC.
I've been to quite a few communities, go out typically on two trips during each winter. And I've been from Heidelberg in southeast Alaska up north through the Brooks Range to Allakaket and Anaktuvik Pass. Been Quinnahock, Tuntutuliak, Eek, Nightmute, Good News Bay. And this year I get to come to Nome and Savunga and gamble.
Merrill said while part of his motivation is an interest in traveling to new parts of the state, the larger reason is helping to bridge taxation policies with the realities of life in rural Alaska.
Well, taxes in the villages can be interesting. It's not the same as in town for obvious reasons. We try to serve the people who do have wage income because often their income is low enough that they are entitled to a refund. And that's a big part of our program is getting people the refunds that they are due. So what's different in the villages, too, is a lot of the activity, of course, is subsistence related.
And of course, subsistence is extremely strong in Savunga. The walrus, whale, seal, bird, and halibut harvests, among others, are robust and account for much of the food people put away and rely on for the year. Walrus ivory is also an essential resource for bridging the subsistence and cash economies, with raw tusks and carvings bringing in capital to the island. But is a walrus counted as taxable income? Alicia Barreni, the other volunteer on the trip, says no.
Subsistence isn't counted. So if you're just fishing and you're just feeding your family, that quote-unquote income of food coming back to your family, but then also those expenses that you might incur from subsistence, subsistence isn't going to be counted as income. So you're not really going to see, that's not going to be accounted in your tax return.
The nearest tax preparer is a plane ride away in Nome. For the last couple of years, ABDC has had volunteers from the Aleutians all the way to Kaktovik working on the front lines of individual financial accounting. Barreni says she had more homework prepping for this trip than any of her classes at NYU Law School, but that there were still pieces of personal finance in Savunga she found difficult to fit into tax forms.
An average person who had a 9-to-5 desk job, they might have one W-2 and maybe they have a little investment. But out here, people, you know, there's a huge problem with unemployment, and a lot of people will have one-off contracting jobs that they can get. They might do day labor or be a part-time janitor. So they're going to have a lot more documents. Usually it's more challenging when you have more paperwork.
Family life is also different in many small communities than the standard taxable unit anticipated by the Internal Revenue Service. Traditionally, the tax code has been structured around one or two earners in a home with a few dependents. Merrill says many of the people living in multi-generational homes in places like Savunga are not provided with clear guidance on how to account for dependents.
The makeup of families is often non-traditional from a tax viewpoint. It's not always a mom and dad and two kids. Very often it's an extended family that includes adopted kids or relatives or kids from outside the family. And so we try to work with the people who come to us as carefully as we can to figure out who is a dependent.
ABDC is financed through a patchwork of grants and donations, some of it coming from the state and the IRS. Part of its mission is securing money from tax returns that might otherwise be left on the table and getting it to stay in state. Last year, they helped just under 8,000 Alaska residents receive about $5.8 million in returns. This year, they have volunteers traveling to every community in the Bering Strait region, including, for the first time, Diomede. The deadline to file for an Alaska Permanent Fund dividend falls on a state holiday this year. March 31st is also Seward's Day. The State Revenue Department says that means the last day to get questions answered before the deadline is March 28th. The department, in a release, says during the last 3 days of the filing season, Alaskans can file online or mail-in applications postmarked no later than March 31st. Dividend payments will be made by direct deposit or check to eligible applicants on October 2nd. The dividend amount is slated to be announced in late September. It's currently 10 minutes after 9 o'clock.